It's a genuine mystery. Though the fish live in the pristine waters off California's north coast, they are contaminated with the methylmercury of mankind's industry. But wait, with the exception of a few medical marijuana plantations, there is no industry in Northern California. This leads us to ask, who is poisoning the fish?
Welcome to the award-winning Food Chain Show with your host, Michael Olson. Now, get ready for an hour of What's Eating What Radio.
Well, hello out there. You are tuned into the 780th edition of the Food Chain right here on News Talk Radio. Or, hey, perhaps you're among our friends way down there in Luganville who are tuned in as we stream along on the Food Chain page at metrofarm.com. But whoever you are and wherever you are, welcome aboard. I am Michael Olson, your host for this hour of What's Eating What Radio with engineer Ricochet on the boards. Hello, Rick.
Hello, Michael.
Folks, it's a genuine whodunit. And today we aim to point the finger at the guilty party. Listen carefully to this sentence I found in a California newspaper article headlined High Levels of Mercury Found in Some State Sport Fish. We, of course, have all seen about a million of these articles, right, over the past decade or so. But listen to this sentence. The report found higher concentrations of methylmercury in fish caught off the northern coast than those caught in the Bay Area. Now think about that for a moment. Why would fish swimming in the pristine waters off the northern California coast contain more mercury than fish swimming in the San Francisco Bay? Geographically speaking, the San Francisco Bay is the sewer pipe of California. If there is something bad going on in the state's interior, it will flow downstream into the San Francisco Bay and accumulate in the fish. But the report says there is more mercury in fish that live in the pristine waters off Northern California. But ladies and gentlemen, there is no industry left in Northern California. Thus, we have a mystery to consider and some guilty parties to point the finger at. And who do we ask? Who is poisoning the fish? We got a perfect person to ask today. He is Dr. Jay Davis, a senior scientist with the San Francisco Estuary Institute. Dr. Davis, welcome to the Food Chain.
Thank you for having me.
Good to have you aboard. What is the San Francisco Estuary Institute?
We're a nonprofit scientific organization that's been in existence for about 20 years.
And what is the business?
We conduct the research and monitoring that's needed to support management of San Francisco Bay and the Delta, and they're collectively known as the San Francisco Estuary.
Good. And what kind of things do you estuarians study?
Well, water quality is one of our big study areas. We also do a lot of work on habitats. Wetlands in particular is a focus area. We have studies where we look at contaminants and other processes in watersheds.
Mm-hmm.
And then we have an interesting novel area that we work in that where we're kind of pioneers, and that's historical ecology.
Ah, interesting. What does that mean?
Yeah. That's an emerging discipline where our scientists gather information, historical information, historical maps, historical accounts of conditions in the past, conditions before the influx of population that came with the gold rush, for example,
mm-hmm.
and try to piece together what the conditions were in the relatively unaltered state, and then how they've changed over time. And this provides useful information for managers now who are trying to
restore things,
ecosystems. And we can't really go back to the way things were, but we can learn a lot from the way things were and try to reach that goal as closely as possible.
Well, good. And I think we might call on some of that expertise in this discussion today when we get right down to it. Let's talk about the pollutants that we're discovering in fish. Two of them in particular, methylmercury and polychlorinated biphenyls, or PCBs. Anything else that we're finding?
Those are the two that really reached levels of concern in the surveys that we've been doing. We also have looked at a variety of other pollutants. Legacy pesticides like DDT
right. Are
still out there, but fortunately their concentrations are below thresholds for concern.
So do we see the concentrations of DDT kind of fading off into the distance then?
They are fading slowly because they're very persistent compounds, and they tend to, the food chains tend to really strongly accumulate them. Mm-hmm.
So forensic geographers 3,000 years from now might find just a tiny trace in one part per trillion, right?
That's basically the picture, yeah. And if they looked in sediments and in buried sediments, they would probably still find concentrations that are relatively high because the sediments are kind of good time capsules and mm-hmm. a good record of what has happened in the past.
Good. Okay, well, let's focus on the two biggie then. Let's start with the PCBs. Now, we're all kind of familiar with them from, they used to use them in electrical insulation and whatnot, correct?
Yeah, they were mainly used in electrical equipment, transformers and capacitors. That's where the large majority of the mass was used, but there were a wide variety of other applications, surprising applications mm-hmm. that were used in paints and caulks and floor waxes and carbonless copy paper as a pesticide extending agent. So they were really widely distributed throughout the environment due to these kind of open uses
mm-hmm.
and occasionally mishandling of the electrical equipment would lead to
a spill or two,
environmental contamination yeah. as well. So we tend to see PCBs near urban areas, near industrial areas, near areas where there were military facilities, and they accumulate in sediment, and they're also just like DDT, very persistent, but their concentrations have declined less slowly than
more rapidly than. Well, here at the Broadcast Central in Santa Cruz, California, we have an antique 1,000-watt radio transmitter, and on the side it says contains danger, contains PCBs, but they don't use PCBs. It's kind of like a legacy problem now, isn't it? We don't use them anymore, or do we?
Well, actually, like your transmitter, it's still legal to use PCBs in old equipment.
Mm-hmm.
The sale and production sale of PCBs has been banned for a long time, but a lot of this old electrical equipment is still in use and still it's still legal to use PCBs.
So then we do not have any of those PCBs in our new 10,000-watt digital transmitter, right? They don't use that same kind of material anymore.
Yeah, they should not be in that new equipment.
Okay, good. But so it's just a legacy thing that's kind of left over from another time. But we're not using them in industry so much anymore, correct?
Well, they are in use, but there's no new equipment being built, and I think the old equipment is slowly being retired. But there's still quite a lot out there in industry, another use that's common is fluorescent light ballasts. So old light ballasts can have PCBs in them. So there's still a lot out there, kind of in our landscape, that's slowly being taken out of circulation and out of use.
So when we see PCBs turning up in our fish, what does that tell us?
Well, the reason that we produced this study that just came out a couple weeks ago,
mm-hmm.
we've been looking at contaminants in fish, is that fish are a great indicator of water quality. Contaminants like PCBs and mercury, which is another kind
of...
Yeah,
we'll pick up mercury after the break that we're going to take here. But I'm just curious, when we see the PCBs in the fish, does that mean that there's just still PCBs left in the environment, right?
That's exactly what it means. And so these are contaminants that are still of great concern. They're a focus of water quality managers. And
there we go. We're going to take a quick break, Dr. Davis. When we come back, we'll talk about the big one, methylmercury, folks. This is the Food Chain Radio Program. Michael Olson, your host for this hour of What's Eating What with Dr. Jay Davis, senior scientist, San Francisco Estuary Institute. We're trying to solve a problem, a mystery. The fish off California's pristine north coast, where there is no industry, contain more PCBs, more methylmercury, than the fish in the San Francisco Bay Area. Who is poisoning our fish? Right back.
Get this. The average acre of farmland in or near the city limits may earn in excess of $123,000 per year. To learn how so much can be earned from so little, pick up a copy of Metro Farm, the guide to growing for big profit on a small parcel of land. Metro Farm is the PMA Ben Franklin Book of the Year Award winner by Michael Olson that contains over 500 pages of photos, charts, checklists, illustrations, and in-depth interviews. Metro Farm will teach you how to develop a strategy, survey markets, select crops, organize business, establish production, prepare for market, and make the sale. Metro Farm will teach you how others just like you earn a good living by growing high-value specialty crops for people who are truly appreciative. Abraham Lincoln said, "The greatest fine art of the future will be the making of a comfortable living from a small parcel of land." Get in on that future today. Pick up a copy of Metro Farm at bookstores, lawn and garden supply stores, 1-800-624-BOOK, or at www.metrofarm.com.
Well, folks, they did a study, and they found an interesting mystery. Whereas the all fish everywhere in the United States, 600 and I don't know how many rivers they tested, but every fish in every river in America contains mercury, methylmercury. But the interesting thing is the fish in the San Francisco Bay Area, which is like the sewer pipe of California, contain less industrial pollutants than do the fish swimming off the pristine coast of Northern California, where there is no industry. So today we ask, who is poisoning our fish up there in the beautiful waters of the Pacific Ocean? Here to tell us, help us figure it out, we have Professor Jay Davis, who is the, or not maybe not a professor, but he's certainly a doctor of science. He's a senior scientist with the San Francisco Estuary Institute. And what a better place to see what's going on than the estuary. So let's go to that industrial pollutant, methylmercury. Well, I was amazed. It's in every fish they looked at across the United States. True, Dr. Davis?
Yes, it's a very widespread problem. Before we go to that, I want to finish the thought that we were covering just before the break. And that is why we look at the fish. It ties in well with the theme of your program. So some of the biggest problems that still remain in our water bodies across California and across the U.S., as you're indicating, is legacy contamination from things like PCBs and mercury. And the best indicator of that contamination is sport fish. The driver of concern is human exposure to these pollutants that are still out in the environment, and the concentrations these pollutants are readily accumulated into the food mm-hmm. chain. They enter the base of the food chain, and then with each step up the food chain, the concentrations increase.
Well, that's exactly where we want to go with this segment. But first, I'd like to pick up methylmercury and exactly what is it and where does it come from?
Okay. Methylmercury is actually, it's largely an industrial pollutant, but it has mercury in the environment comes from many sources, and it's a mixture of natural sources. In Northern California, the rocks are the main are a major source of mercury. There's a mercury mineral belt that goes through the Coast Range of Northern California, and this area is actually where 90% of the mercury that was mined in the U.S. between 1850 and 1980 came from Northern California. So it's a very mercury-rich area. The rocks all along the Coast Range have
mercury in
background
them.
Of mercury.
Mm-hmm.
So that's one major source, and that the mercury that was mined was taken up into the Sierra Nevada and to other parts of California to use in gold mining.
Right.
Because mercury forms an amalgam with gold, and that was they would amalgamate the gold, and then basically burn off the mercury, and they would try to recapture the mercury, but they weren't, they didn't, back in the gold rush era, they weren't, so aware of the environmental hazards of mercury.
So California is literally drenched in mercury.
California is drenched, and it's pretty unique in having this big mining legacy.
Mm-hmm.
The mercury mining and the gold mining.
Now, is that where all the mercury's coming from then, out in the ocean?
That's only part of the picture. There are also sources of mercury, kind of very similar to PCBs. Mercury has been used in a lot of industrial and commercial applications and mm-hmm. switches and batteries and light bulbs in a variety of uses. Dental amalgam is another one. So urban areas have these diverse sources of mercury, and another sort of general part of the landscape where mercury is entering water bodies. And then mercury is a really interesting element in that, it's a metal, but it's liquid at room temperature. That's pretty, that's unique. And then it also can enter the atmosphere, and it has a long residence time in the atmosphere. So once it goes up into the atmosphere, it stays there on average for a year. A mercury atom will stay up in the atmosphere for something on the order of a year. And during that time, it can get distributed around the globe through global atmospheric processes. And so there are other sources that come into play that on a global scale are really important. In California, we're also a little unique in that we don't have a lot of coal-fired power plants. We have very, very little.
Do we have any?
There's only a couple of small facilities that burn coal for power.
Mm-hmm.
But in the eastern part of the country, coal burning is huge. And that's when you burn fossil fuels, mercury enters the atmosphere. And this is a major global source of mercury in the atmosphere. And this mercury that's in the atmosphere is distributed globally in deposits, little bit deposits all around the globe as well.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's also natural sources of mercury to the atmosphere.
Like volcanoes?
Yeah, volcanoes, exactly. So it's really a large mix of human derived material and then natural mercury emissions.
Okay, good. So how does it accumulate? How does mercury accumulate? You started to touch on that. Now that we know what mercury is, how does it accumulate in the food chain?
Well, mercury is really a fascinating pollutant. It's challenging to understand the patterns that we see because of that. A key step in mercury entering the food chain is for it to become methylated. So having a methyl
group, as opposed to mentholated.
Yes.
what is methylating something?
Well, it's basically adding a carbon, and this makes a big difference in how the mercury behaves. It makes it easily enter living tissue.
Oh.
So mercury is methylated by bacteria in the environment, especially where oxygen levels in the water are low. So Under those conditions, methylmercury can be created, and then this form of methylmercury is the form that accumulates very readily. The concentration in algae, phytoplankton, is about a million times higher than the concentration in water. So it gets really concentrated in algae, and then with each step up the food chain, the concentrations go up a little more, about threefold increase with each step up the food chain.
So as I understand it, it's not soluble. So once an organism consumes the mercury, it can't be excreted.
Well, it's excreted slowly. It binds, the methylmercury can move throughout the body, and it binds in particular to muscle tissue, and this may be getting a little too detailed, but
no, actually, I think it's important because that's how it accumulates, right?
Yeah. So there are amino acids in muscle tissue that have sulfur on them, and the sulfur binds the mercury, and so it's the muscle, the protein, that's really binding the mercury, and that's important for people to understand because that's what people, target for eating. So you can't really, there's no cooking technique.
You can't cook it out. It's
right
there. Well, now when we understand how it accumulates, but let's talk about how it becomes magnified and becomes a significant danger to us, the biomagnification of mercury in our food chain, in our fish, and, of course, in us. This is The Food Chain. Michael Olson here. Who is poisoning the fish? That's the question today. We have Dr. Jay Davis with us, who is a senior scientist, San Francisco Estuary Institute. And, of course, we have you. If you have questions about mercury accumulating in our environment and you know who is poisoning our fish, let us know. 831-479-1080. 479-1080. Right back. Well, folks, California looked at its fish and found an interesting thing. This from the report. Higher concentrations of methylmercury in fish caught on the northern coast than those caught in the Bay Area. A mystery. Why would there be more mercury in the pristine waters of the Pacific Ocean off California's north coast than in the Bay Area, which accumulates stuff from all throughout California? That is the mystery we're working with today with Dr. Jay Davis and you. Phone numbers today, 831-479-1080. Dr. Davis, we were talking about how methylmercury accumulates in the environment, in the food chain. But now let's learn how it magnifies, how it is become magnified in the along the food chain.
Yes. Well, as I mentioned earlier, with each step up the food chain, the concentrations go up about threefold. And this is basically a function of the really efficient retention of the mercury that's ingested and digested, and then slow excretion. And as organisms age, the mercury accumulates over time, increases over time, and so as you go up the food chain, the size and age of the organisms is increasing. So, at the very top, the large fish are eating a little bit smaller fish, but each increase in size and age, the concentrations are going up. So
the concentration's not only going up, but they become magnified.
Yeah, and that's the threefold increase, and that's kind of that's in contrast to some other pollutants that don't biomagnify. The concentrations aren't increasing as you go up the food chain. They can stay constant, or they can decrease as you go up the food chain. And biomagnification is when the concentrations increase as you go up.
And then what happens to people who have accumulated way too much methylmercury?
For adults, it can have effects on the nervous system and cause tremors and there have been some accounts of this in the public media lately with people who eat a lot of sushi, but that seems to be reversible. The bigger concern is for effects on the fetus and on young children whose nervous systems are developing. And so there's advice that's issued where concentrations in fish are high in particular water bodies or for particular species in commerce. And the advice is most restrictive for children and for women who are pregnant or of childbearing age, because the goal is to protect the most sensitive population, which is young children.
And in situations where there have been large-scale industrial contaminations of mercury, a lot of people were seriously impacted and some were killed. I think of in Japan, I think really all of this happened before we really knew what we were doing with mercury, but a large industrial concern was just dumping all of its excess mercury into the ocean. And a lot of people were killed and seriously. They talked about birds falling out of the sky and all kinds of this stuff. We don't see that anymore, do we?
No, that was really an extreme case of mercury contamination, the Minamata Bay basin. That really put mercury on the map in terms of awareness of that.
So that was really the incident that said, hey, wait a minute, what is this stuff? Let's go quickly to the phones today, folks. The phone number is 831-479-1080. And we have, I think, BB, is this you? Hello?
Yobi.
Well, yes. Go ahead.
I have this particular question due to the fact that my mother passed on from Alzheimer's because my stepfather, her husband, was a doctor in two doctorates in psychology, so she believes everything he said, and he believed all doctors physically. And she died of Alzheimer's because she did not, at my recommendation, remove her mercury amount of fillings. So what I have found is that most people don't understand that what off-gassing is or sublimation. So what percent of the contribution to Alzheimer's and the resulting death, my mom took 6 years from diagnosis to death, and what percent of the contribution to that is mercury? And is it the primary factor in Alzheimer's?
That's a good question, and thank you very much for making it right here on the Food Chain. Dr. Davis, how much of our problems with Alzheimer's and all of the rest of our ailments are caused by mercury in our teeth, in the amalgams fillings in our teeth?
That's unfortunately that's not my area of expertise. My focus is on water quality and not the human health end, so I can't really shine much light on that. I'm sorry.
There you go. Let's turn to the mystery of why there is mercury in the fish in the North Coast and not in the San Francisco Bay Area. As a estuarian with the chief scientist for the San Francisco Estuary Institute, you do know a lot about the geographical history of California, like you were talking about earlier, a very fascinating history. Geographically, I guess it's kind of unkind to say, but it's true, the San Francisco Bay Area is kind of like the sewer pipe of California in that it drains everything from the Siskiyous in the way up in the north all the way down the Sierras to the Tehachapis in the south, and everything in California's Great Central Valley. So is that a fair statement?
Yes. This report that we just issued is the latest in a series of reports where we're looking at sport fish, contaminants in sport fish throughout the state. We started in lakes and looked at nearly 300 lakes across the state and looked at mercury and PCBs and all these other pollutants. And then last year we released a report. We did a two-year survey on the coast, and we released the report on the first year last year, and that covered San Francisco Bay and the Southern California region near L.A., the urbanized area of Southern California. And we found what we expected in San Francisco Bay. Concentrations in some species are high, like shark species. Striped bass have high concentrations as well. And other species have lower concentrations, like shiner surf perch. And then we, And so aside from San Francisco Bay, which stood out as having high concentrations, we saw moderate concentrations on the coast near San Francisco Bay, and generally they were moderate in Southern California as well.
Hmm.
So when I first got the data back from the second year of the survey, I was expecting the second year to be kind of a quiet year, you know, given the sort of background that you've been going over with the North Coast and the Central Coast was the other area that we didn't sample yet, being relatively undeveloped, you know, none of these urban sources nearby. San Francisco Bay has this huge mining legacy, which...
We're going to have to take a quick break, but that's what I want to, exactly what I want to pick up.
Yeah.
All of the mines that dumped their mercury into California had to go through the San Francisco Bay. So if you were thinking you'd find mercury, surely it would be in the San Francisco Bay. And yet there was more mercury in those fish that swim in the pristine waters off California's north coast. Who is poisoning the fish? Right back. Do stay tuned. Michael Olson, Dr. J. Davis. Well, why does the... Why do the fish up there in Northern California have all of that mercury? Well, those in the San Francisco Bay have less. And if you think about it, ladies and gentlemen, it should be that the fish in San Francisco have the accumulations, and yet they don't. What did you think when you saw the numbers, Dr. J. Davis?
Well, I was quite surprised when I first got the data back for the North and Central Coast and saw more frequent occurrence of locations with high concentrations and concentrations in some cases that are rivaling what we saw in San Francisco Bay, widely distributed. And at first I thought there must have been a mistake. But as I dug into the information a little deeper, I was able to sort out at least, you know, why those concentrations, you know, some of the explanation of why those concentrations are high, not so much where the mercury is coming from.
Mm-hmm.
That mystery hasn't totally been solved yet, but it does make sense in retrospect what's going on there. So,
you know, tell us about San Francisco and the history of the San Francisco Bay with respect to its relationships to the gold field and the use of mercury there.
Well, San Francisco Bay, as you've been describing, is sort of the repository, the ultimate repository for contamination from 40% of the state, including the mercury mining area and then the mother lode in the Sierra Nevada. All that drains to San Francisco Bay. And as I was saying before, mercury was spread across the landscape due to those activities, and hydraulic mining in particular moved a massive amount of sediment down from the Sierra Nevada foothills down to the bay and greatly reduced the depth of the bay and put this big slug of sediment that's got moderate mercury contamination and spread it throughout the bay. So both of these types of mining activity have spread mercury throughout the whole bay.
So quite literally, the entire drainage that goes into the San Francisco Bay has throughout California's history literally been drenched with mercury.
Yeah.
And yet the fish in the San Francisco Bay have less mercury than the fish off the pristine Northern California coast. Now, I've had the opportunity to spend significant time up there. There's no industry up there. There may be a coal-burning power plant, but I don't think so. The only industry I can think of left up there are some pot farmers. So you look at the source of mercury, and most of it's, of course, coming from coal-burning power plants and industrial sources. So where is it coming from, Doctor?
Well, first I want to the reason that the concentrations are high up there has to do with the food chain.
All right.
And so the big the big driver of patterns that we saw up and down the coast was what species were present at the locations we sampled. We sampled five species at each location, and the species composition varies as you go from the north, northern border down to Mexico.
Right.
In the north, there are a lot of rockfish species.
And they live a long time.
Quite a variety of rockfish. And in the south, it's a different mix with kelp bass and some other species and fewer rockfish. Rockfish, as you said, can live a long time. And they're situated at the top of the food chain. And as I mentioned earlier, animals accumulate mercury over time. It builds up over time. So rockfish are some of the longest lived fish species, and the species that we found to have high concentrations are the long lived species and the species that are mm-hmm. predators at the top of the food chain, like leopard sharks and smoothhound sharks, which we estimate around 15 to 20 years old at the size we were collecting. And in the rockfish, there were some rockfish that had high concentrations, like copper rockfish, rosy rockfish, China rockfish. Their average age was in the 10 to 15 year range. We didn't measure age, so these are just estimates, but these were the longer lived rockfish species that had a high position in the food chain. And that's a big part of the mystery. Wherever you see these long lived predator species, they're likely to have
higher concentrations because mercury accumulates from the very smallest of life, the algae and plankton.
Right.
It accumulates all the way up the food chain. When the little tiny fish eat the plankton, they eat the mercury, and it accumulates in their body. But
right.
as that mercury accumulates, it becomes magnified on its way up the food chain. So the bigger the fish, the more concentrated the mercury. Now, where does the mercury come from? I have a theory, and I'd like to offer it up to all of you. I think I know who's poisoning the fish, and I'm going to offer it and see what Dr. J. Davis thinks of my theory. This is The Food Chain. I am Michael Olson, your host for this hour of What's Eating What Radio. Dr. J. Davis, the San Francisco Estuary Institute. And if anybody knows what's going on in the waters, it's the people at the end of the sewer pipe of California. And that is the stunningly beautiful San Francisco Bay Area. We will be right back after these messages. Please do stay tuned. This is The Food Chain radio program. Who is poisoning the fish, right? Well, folks, who is poisoning the fish? I think I know. And I'm going to tell you. And I'm going to, what I think at least, of course, it's only what I think. And then I'll ask Dr. J. Davis from the San Francisco Estuary Institute if what I think has any relative bearing on the true subject of who is poisoning the fish. Well, here it is. I think we are poisoning the fish. That's right. You and I. We're not out there dumping methyl mercury into the water. Of course not. On the contrary, we hate that kind of behavior. We are so adamant about being clean, in fact, that we have chased all of our industry out of the country. Out away. Go away. Out, out, out. Damn spot. And so it's gone. And thus, even the fish in the San Francisco Bay are now clean, or relatively so, compared to those off the North Coast. So where did that mercury come from? Well, I think that in chasing our industry away, we did not chase our demand for the goodies, the stuff of life away. We still want things, and we want them cheaply. So, of course, our industry left and went to where it's cheap, which, of course, is China, India, and those places. And so they are only too happy to provide us with cheap things. To do so, of course, they're building coal-burning power plants. One a day, they say. A new coal-burning power plant. And these coal-burning power plants are feeding on coal from all over the world. 40 railroad cars every day full of Montana coal are reaching the ports where they're being shipped to China and India to fuel the fires of our consumption. And so there we are. Those coal-burning power plants are burning our coal. The methylmercury goes up into the air. And guess who is dead downwind from China and India? Well, of course, it's us. And there we are. And thus, the pollutant, the methylmercury from our demand for cheap food ends up coming across the beautiful Pacific Ocean and landing in the water and landing on our lakes and rivers. And so it's us. You and I, we are polluting those fish. What do you think, Dr. J. Davis? Am I crazy?
No, I think it's likely that you're spot on. And this is a big question for water quality managers, the State Water Board, which funds this work that is looking at patterns across the state. They want to clean up the water bodies that need to be cleaned up. But here, it's not so easy because there aren't local controllable sources. One other question mark around this is upwelling. There is upwelling along the coast, and there's been some nice work recently out of UC Santa Cruz, actually, that's shown high methylmercury in fog, a marine fog that seems to be related to upwelling. So this upwelling, it could be upwelling of mercury that was deposited from the atmosphere, or there could be hydrothermal vents, natural sources as well. It could be a mix down there. So that's one of the question marks. How much might be coming from upwelling versus how much is coming from the atmosphere across the ocean? Before we finish up, I want to make sure I point listeners to a couple of good sources of information.
Please do.
How to reduce their exposure to mercury and PCBs in the fish they eat. There's a website that you can find by Googling My Water Quality. It's a website that's got information on whether it's safe to eat the fish and shellfish.
And the second one is?
And the second one is the website of a state agency. It's the definitive source of...
What is it, Rudy, quickly?
Office of Environmental Health Hazard Assessment.
Thank you. Out of time. Office of Environmental Health Assessment. All right. Thank you, Dr. J. Davis. Out of time. Mike Olson. Thank you all for tuning in. Remember, cheap food isn't.
You've been listening to the award-winning Food Chain Show with Michael Olson. If your friends missed the show today, tell them to log on to the radio page at www.metrofarm.com for a listen. Now go out and find some food with a farmer's face on it and live.